Join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, with a fun visit from Dick. We can throw anything past Dick. He just, I should have followed up a little bit with him on the deer. I'm sure many of you live in areas that you deal with this. They are just they're more than a nuisance. I mean, they're a danger. And boy, you want to talk about stupid? It's unbelievable. I mean, they literally, we talk about horses being, you know, flighty and on edge, but that's part of their makeup. I mean, the deer, they got that little tiny cranium, and then, you know, they got a walnut size for a brain. They do the dumbest things. I mean, the standing in the middle of the road, Or the best is when they turn, they know there's a problem, and instead of running across the street, they run, you know, parallel or straight into traffic. It's just, I've only ever hit one. Honestly, with where I've lived, for as long as I've lived and as much driving as I do, and I went a long, long time. Tina, in fact, when Tina and I met, she was amazed that I had never hit a deer. And I'd hit a few other small animals, which frankly is much more distressing. Because Tina says she's, I don't know, she thinks she's maybe hit four over the years. And you know, for those of you who don't know where Dick lives, Dick is on the road between, for anybody that's ever gone west on the thruway, you drive from Saratoga through Ballston Spa, through Charlton, Amsterdam, and then you get on the thruway. And that stretch, that's the stretch where Tina saw a moose and her baby. A moose and a baby moose. Moose and squirrel. That stretch is bad. I mean, that whole, it doesn't matter. From here to Bennington is terrible. And Manchester, I mean, they're everywhere. That, as we're waiting for Sid, my story with the hitting of the deer is very funny because Tina and I were coming back. We were driving at night on a Saturday night. We were driving from Hamilton and we went to Colgate, but we didn't go to Colgate for anything Colgate related. Her son, Zach, they were playing Morrisville, SUNY Morrisville, and he went to SUNY Brockport. So they were playing Morrisville, and I think Morrisville, or Cortland, Morrisville. And the field, it had snowed. And so the field took like 4 inches of snow, and they couldn't play at Morrisville. At Colgate on Andy Kerr Field, we've got synthetic. And so they moved the game to Hamilton. So I said, well, I think we were probably going anyway. But anyhow, my dearest late friend John Hubbard took wonderful pictures of Zach that day, professional pictures. And it was near the end of Zach's career. So now we're driving home on Route 20. For those of you that know the Boston Post Road, Boston to Buffalo, Route 20 is the oldest of old highways. And you take from Hamilton, you take Route 20 back east to Gilderland, and then, you know, we start to angle toward Saratoga. So we stopped in, did we stop in, that wasn't in Sharon Springs, which of the springs, little springs towns, and about less than midway, we were maybe an hour outside of Hamilton, and we stopped at a Stewart's to get milkshakes. We're both suckers for coffee milkshakes. And so I'm driving, which is unusual. This is before my eyes went to hell. So I pull out of Stewart's, and I'm not going 20 miles an hour. I mean, this must have been in, not West Winfield. I can see the town, but I can't see the name of the town on the clock right on Route 20. There's a hill. You start to go up a hill. So I'm not even going 20 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, it's like eight tiny reindeer. There's like a deer that literally is leaping into my field of vision. And my right front quarter panel catches him and sends him careening. I mean, like he goes flying off onto somebody's lawn. And it made like a clunk. It didn't even sound all that, you know, calamitous. Thank you, Leslie. Richfield Springs is correct. So they've actually moved that Stewart's has now been moved. It's sitting empty if anybody wants to rent it. But Tina, for those of you that know Stewart's milkshakes, they put a cap on it, a lid, and it's got the perforated hole for your straw, and it's impossible to put the straw through the perforated hole. The perforated hole, it's like something that's done, you know, it's like one of those games when you were a kid, you know, the thing you rock with the little ball bearing, and it's supposed to go in the hole, and somehow you're supposed to put all three ball bearings in the holes, and it's just impossible. It's just, it can't be done. The same, you can't put your straw through this perforated hole without, you know, making the milkshake come glopping out everywhere like lava from Vesuvius. So Tina is trying to get the straw through the hole, and she looks up and says, "What was that?" And I said, "I hit a deer." And she said, "No, you didn't." I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "No, you must have gone over a stick." I said, "Tina." I said, "I saw it. The thing went flying. It's a deer." And she goes, "I know you didn't." So now there's nobody on the road. It's like quarter to midnight. I back the car up, and I start to make like a K-turn, and my lights go on to this person's yard, and here's this mangled deer. Oh, my God, it's like something out of, you know, it's like out of the, it's out of upstate New York Chainsaw Massacre. And I'm like, oh, my God. So we turn and start to drive. And there happens to be a state police barracks at the top of the hill. So I stopped. I said, I gotta let somebody know, right? She goes, I guess. So there was a little bit of damage. And so I pull into the and you know, there's no state troopers around, and there's a phone. And you pick up the phone, and, you know, it's like from Airplane, you know, Captain Over, you know, pick up the white phone. And all of a sudden, there's a trooper on the other end. And I tell him what happens, and he said, is it in the road? I said, no, it's on somebody's lawn. He said, oh, don't worry about it. So that's why, Sid is with us. Sid, did you ever hit a deer?
No, I haven't. God, how awful, huh?
We're joking, but you've got brethren on two wheels, motorcyclists, who can be killed if they hit.
Oh, I know. It's something that I always look out for that, especially, you know, in areas like that, because that's like the greatest fear, that you're going to hit something like that. And then it's over.
Well, folks, yeah, exactly. It's just like that. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Donner and Blitzen. No, brought to you by by Hill and Dale. Another good session yesterday. And Sid, even better, actually, yesterday, the session with a $600,000 Tappet filly. And here's our man's. There's no stopping the greens right now. DJ Stable, they take home this filly, who actually had RNA'd at Keeneland for 4 1/4. The top colt knockdown, Tom McCrocklin, takes home one that Jack Oxley bred, a Into Mischief out of the terrific, delightful Mary that we all remember. $560,000. How about Ron Winchell? Doesn't breed enough gun runners. He had to go buy himself one. The Gun Runner Colt for $550,000. And then here's Good Magic for Hill and Dale. Speedway, $400,000 for a Good Magic Colt out of the very nice Divine Escapade, bred by Sun Valley. So there were the top sellers, and it seems like demand is just not going to let up.
Demand is just up everywhere, isn't it? And, all these signs point, of course, to the big sales coming up, which are, now that we're done with the yearling sales after this sale tomorrow, you've got Fajic Tipton, and then the Marathon Keeneland November sale. So, you know, this type of demand creates more interest in the mares and the weanlings that, are the vehicles, the mares, especially the vehicles for production. So I think it's a harbinger, carrying over to the bloodstock sales.
Well, and kind of a off the docket storyline that is behind the scenes or running parallel to the trade at the same time, Sid, are these reports of mares bred and the cover reports that have come out in the last few weeks indicating that the number of foals, the lowering number, has slowed. But we've been hoping for something of a pendulum swing back in the other direction, and that is not necessarily come to fruition yet. So the sheer volume of availability, the numbers stay dear essentially.
Yeah, I guess it's another decline again in terms of live polls, but you know, you can that's kind of independent of the demand for these yearlings, because what it's showing is that the less production is creating more demand at the sale,
right?
It's also a lot of these numbers, as you pointed out with the mayor's bread, point out that the number of stallions standing every year is also declining, but the horses that are standing at stud are tending to get more mares. So you've got lesser number of stallions breeding proportionately more mares. So what you have are a lot of these expensive stallions, you know, mixed in with newer young horses, getting a lot of mares. And I think the real takeaway from all this is that it's just reflecting the leadership of this game. What they really are sculpting a racing landscape for are the top tracks. And, that's where the attention is paid, all your big tracks. And if you kind of take that blueprint and put it onto the breeding industry, it's the same thing happening. It's the top horses, basically, the top farms that are thriving. And what you see when, there's a 10% drop year to year versus number of stallions going to stud. Well, that's more reflective of all the smaller people that are getting out. So to really have a change in the production of horses would mean participation from all segments of the industry, including regional programs and the bottom part of the business. And that's really, you know, all said and done, with all these great prices and at the yearling sales and big purses at the tracks, it's not reflective overall in the bottom part of the industry. And that's really what, you know, everybody says, the jockey club, the leadership, you know, they're more concerned with the top end of the game. And that's really what we're seeing, Steve, in the breeding industry.
Yeah. Well, and in addition to the players who we're very familiar with, there is, like we talked with Jess Martini yesterday, there is the incursion all the time of new people, fresh faces that want to get involved in the game. And then, I'm going to use a friend in this case to highlight again, our friend Will Schwartz. They struck on day one for $200,000, struck again yesterday for a City of Light filly yesterday, one that was bred by Ashview and Rich Santulli. The City of Light out of Boodles for $300. They're stepping up. Will has retired, and he wants to step up his involvement in the game, and he's buying fillies with an eye of building the broodmare band long term. So there's also the constant stepping up of existing players and those that come in, you know, from the sidelines that have never been involved. So there's a lot of things at work that are fueling this. I mean, it's more than a brush fire. I mean, it's a full on conflagration.
Yeah, the demand is there. You know, it's there's no question about it. There's demand, obviously. Whether that demand, the big question that you're asking and we're talking about is that whether that demand is eventually going to get more fold on the ground. In other words, is the supply going to increase with the increased demand. And so that's going to be a really interesting question to ponder, because you're going to continue to get increased demand. Say next year the full crop actually goes down to 17,000. Well, the demand is going to continue to go up while that happens, right?
Yeah. The bloodstock sale is going to be interesting too, and I'll fold in two things as part of this. The other element in terms of that volume, or the volume, let's say, of premium, of potential premium bloodstock, that gets rated. That vault gets rated every November, right, Sid? They come from Australasia and take home, you know, top brood mares out of our circulation. I mean, Midnight Bizu's going to go through. She's got a huge target, I would think, on her back for the Japanese. They love that kind of a target.
Yeah, all your top mares are always, you know, potential targets. What is really interesting at the top of the market this year is that you're going to have a bunch of elite stallions standing for, you know, more stallions are standing for more than 150,000 per the entire pool in Kentucky commercial pool than we've had in quite a long time. You know, we've got Into Mischief at 250, Curlin 225, and of course all the way down to six figures, starting at 100,000 too. Life is Good is going to be 100,000. You've got Tappet in there, you've got Uncle Mo, and then you're going to have potentially Flightline coming into there too. So when you're talking about these really elite mares, you're going to have, I think, more competition for them this year from domestic buyers than in the past, because you need to get these types of mares into, you know, potentially Flightline's book. Curlin's going to need them. All these horses, Gunrunner, he's going to be probably the most expensive horse, if I had to guess, for next year. And, you know, it's not outside the question. You know, it could be 300,000. So there aren't that many high-end mares to, you know, given these 150, 200 mare books for all these elite stallions. So, I mean, there's got to be some competition for some of these mares for them as well. So it's going to be really interesting, based on what you just said, with these, you know, with foreign interest and so forth. We're kind of looking at a potential explosion at the top in these markets, Phase of Tipton, and then the first book, maybe part of the second book, first session of book two at Keeneland. I think you're going to start, you know, I think you're going to have some big fireworks, if I had to predict it right now, because of this situation with these stallions right now. You know, Gunrunner and, say, Flightline does go to stud. I mean, those two horses are going to demand the highest quality mare, not to mention, you know, the proven horses like Flightline, I mean, Curlin, and Into Mischief, you know.
Should mention Curlin and take this opportunity, for those that have been watching, and of course, in advance of Breeders' Cup week, and with so many breeders and excuse me, industry stakeholders, in Lexington, between the sale and Breeders' Cup, the opportunity to visit the farms and you know, take a look at the stallion, you know, the stallion shows. Curlin has been bumped to 225,000 for 2023, heading Hill and Dale's sparkling lineup. Ghost Zapper remains unchanged at 75,000. Army Mule, who has been very, very successful, and things have gone very well, in fact, for the young, for all the young stallions. We'll get to Good Magic in a second, but Army Mule, 12.5. Charlatan being introduced at 50,000. Cantheros, 20,000. Lost Treasure, who I'm sure Jared Burdine and John Sakura would be happy to explain to people the opportunity to breed to Lost Treasure. 3,500. McLean's Music, 50,000. Midnight Loot, a perennial bargain. Just gets runners, gets winners. 12.5. Mucho Macho Man, who's settled in as, you know, as a solid, useful stallion. 7,500. Violence, notorious with the win early types. 40,000. And World of Trouble, 5,000. Good Magic's price, said, is going to be determined down, you know, post Breeders' Cup, and after the, you know, the 2 year old first crop results are chiseled in, and you can understand that. So, you know, those that want access to a son of Curlin at Hillendale, Good Magic, your obvious choice.
Yeah, and good Magic, you know, is the only freshman sire so far, sire grade one winner, and that's Blazing Sevens, who, by the way, happened to be a mating that we assisted Tracy Farmer with.
Yeah.
And that horse is obviously, you know, going into Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He's got three stakes winners this year. The highest is four with Justify, but all three of Good Magic stakes winners are graded winners. You know, got Curly Jack and Vegas Magic as well. And, you know, a good number of winners. He's got that great profile. And today's TDN, I wrote about the six freshman sires, Army Mule, one of them, obviously Good Magic, Boldoro, Sharp Azteca, Justify, and Gervin. Six in the top 10 leading sires of two-year-olds. And they're all kind of bunched in there. And there's three right outside the top 10. That's Mendelssohn, 11th, Oscar Performance, 15, and City of Light, 16. They're all kind of all bunched in there. And any of these five Breeders' Cup Juvenile races could catapult one or the other to the top of this list, which is pretty amazing. So I can see why they haven't given a price on Good Magic yet, because, you know, if he does end up with a Breeders' Cup winner, I mean, that would be absolutely huge. But it's important to note that it's been a really good crop of first crop sires with, you know, just these ones I mentioned so far. And, you know, some of these horses that we're talking about right now are going to be end up being the leading sires of their crops. You know, like going back, like in 2014, it was Quality Road made this list. You know, he's, you know, again, he's another horse that's going to be demanding top mares, you know, in the six-figure stud-free range. Uncle Mo came from this list. You know, Gunrunner led it last year with his first crop of two-year-olds. But, you know, knocked off Into Mischief for the first time in a few years. So what we're potentially watching are some of these types of horses developing, you know, and some of these horses in this group are going to be, in a few years, you know, set in the same breath with some of these high-quality horses that I just mentioned before.
Well, we'll keep including the announced rosters as we get past Breeders' Cup, and I'm going to stay in Kentucky after the Breeders' Cup too for the sale for a few days and broadcast from there.
I'll be there for a few days too.
To.
I'll be there for a few days.
I wonder.
Well, yeah, after the Breeders' Cup, I'm going to be there for Faith Tipton on Sunday. And the first book, Akeem and Monday, I'm going to release Tuesday. So I'll catch you at the sale.
Excellent. We'll get a we'll get your Breeders' Cup impressions then on the Monday show at the very least. All right.
Yeah. Do it live over.
Sid, I threw a kind of an offbeat topic at you because while I was handicapping this morning, getting ready for tomorrow's Belmont at Aqueduct Pick Six carryover, which is really attractive. It's a very fun card, and right in the middle of the whole thing is there's actually two maiden races, the sixth and the ninth. The ninth are New York breds going long on the grass, which is always a favorite condition of mine. However, the sixth race is a state bred dirt sprint, and there was the presence of a Chet Broman, Chet and Mary Broman, homebred by McLean's Music out of Ante Up My Friend, who dropped from the unbelievably productive Seeking the Ante, herself a daughter of the wonderful Ante Spend. And Ante Spend, notably for the Bromans, got both Friends Lake and Seeking the Ante with APND and Seeking the Gold, respectively. And as I was looking for some precocity equivalents for this, Mariachi is the name of the horse tomorrow, Sid. I looked at every sibling of the mare, all the daughters of Seeking the Ante, and every one of the daughters has got a major two-year-old or three-year-old that's running right now. And it just made me really realize, and we've referred to it, most notably when the Broman's filly won the when Bar of Gold won the Breeders' Cup filly mare sprint at the monster price. But the Bromans have really contributed to the New York bred program with some savvy matings. And this is an amazing female family that feels like it's going to be productive in multiple directions for a long time.
And particularly with the New York breds, and as when you mentioned that to me, I also mentioned to you the two-year-old McLean's Music from the same family, Acoustic Avenue, who we just talked about last week.
That's right.
So that McLean's Music is very closely related to the maiden you're looking at, Mariachi, since it's both McLean's Music from the same female family, going back to Ante Spend.
The siblings of this mare, Ante Up My Friend, include G-Note. She's got the Bernardini $3.5 million two-year-old Hijazi, who, of course, you're all familiar with because of Gary Young's regular presence on the show. Then there's Barbie on a Budget. She got Fingal's Cave, who's had a terrific season, the Carpe Diem. There's also Risk a Chance, herself Stakes Placed, daughter of Seeking the Ante. She got the one-eyed popular Unoho that won the Rebel last year. It's unbelievable. Then there's Mineralogist, the three-time New York bred stake winner. And Can You Dig It, the most notable performer. Mineralogist is the oldest of the babies that came out of Seeking the Ante. But to me, it was stunning the more I looked at all the success that Chet Broman's had.
And particularly with these New York breds, it's funny when you did bring it up to me. The reason I texted you back immediately, I didn't tell you about this when I texted it, but would you believe just yesterday we did a broodmare analysis, our broodmare compatibility, our broodmare report for a daughter of Mineralogy. Just yesterday.
That's hysterical. That's funny.
And so that's why I had like all that stuff right at my fingertips, because in the report, you know, talk exactly about all the horses you were talking about. Because, you know, we look at all the daughters as well, as you just did, you know. What you just did is very similar to what any pedigree analyst would do. First, they check the mare's produce, then the sister's produce, see what they were, you know. And, of course, Hijazi comes out. He's not a stakes winner yet, but, you know, $3.55 million, two-year-old, obviously, with Bob Baffert. Ran 100 buyer in a losing effort to Bayern called Beach Speedboat Beach. But yeah, it's very prolific, and so we just did it. And you know, one of the horses that you didn't even mention in this was there's a Southern Hemisphere G1 winner by Scat Daddy, I think, called Southern Scat or something like that. It's also obviously it's a big family in South America too, because Anti-Spend comes from you know, an Argentine family. So yeah, it is a good family. And one good way to look at it also is that, you know, when these daughters can produce, you know, even though it's New York bred, black type winners by horses like Carpe Diem, you know, he's not exactly the hottest stallion in the world. And so that kind of speaks to the quality of the family, that, you know, even with a stallion to be not judgmental, but, you know, nondescript, for the most part, here you get a black type winner by him, you know?
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned Anti-Spend's origins, because the mare, this is another theme that, you know, that you strike upon in you know, when the occasion arises, and that is the introduction of international bloodstock, you know, to basically, you know, augment and in many cases, you know, add some, how can we call it? I suppose just a kind of a different, you know, some different bloodlines from, you know, interject. We bring this up with No Double, for instance, with, you know, Dash Goff's father and you know, what he introduced. And in this particular case, the mayor, Auspiciant, an Argentinian mare. And of course, when you say that, the first person you think of in the 80s would be Ron McAnally, and that's exactly what this is. This is a Ron McAnally and a horse that somehow Jack Kent Cook, somebody found this mare, and Jack Kent Cook bought in. And once it left Argentina, went on a, you know, a nice run, was carefully handled, and after some allowance efforts, started to be introduced to Graded Stake Company and won the Ramona at Del Mar in 86, first grade one win. Later won the Matriarch, and I think won something else, the Beverly Hills, as well for McAnally.
And it's Jack Kent Cook. It was from that sale that Chester Broman bought Anti-Spend, I think, for $900,000. Might have been a two-year-old.
Yep.
Yeah.
Was that a dispersal or just a call?
Yeah, I think that was the dispersal sale.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the auction history. Keeneland April, two-year-old in training. There you go. Elmendorf Farm, historic, $900,000. And as savvy a buy as, and, you know, at that time, you know, to bring a $900,000 purchase, you know, to New York, and everything that, you know, that went from there. And actually, is it fair to say that it was Anti-Spend that had to be one of Spendabuck's top performers, no?
Yes. It's also an interesting thing because Spendabuck ended up not a very good stallion. He started off at Lane's End. And what happened was Anthony Spend, her success drove Southern Hemisphere interest in Spendabuck. And he ended up eventually, you know, going down South America. And even though he wasn't greatly successful in this country, the fact that he got this really good mare from an Argentine family prompted breeders in Brazil to use him. And in his time in Brazil, he ended up siring a bunch of horses that were grade one winners, some of whom came up here, like Einstein.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. So, it, you know, it was fortuitous for Spendabuck's languishing career that the South American connection sparked interest in South America, which led to a resurgence of Spendabuck. Don't forget another one of those Spendabucks that came up north, Kenny McPeak had that horse that he took to Europe to run into King George, remember? Also by Spendabuck.
I know who you mean. Yeah, I know who you mean. Ugh. I can sort of see the... Yeah. I see the name.
Spendabuck suddenly got like 8 Group 1 winners in his time in South America, and he probably only had one here with Andy Spend, to be honest. I mean, I'm just going off, you know, memory. But it really is amazing how some stallions are better in one hemisphere versus another, and that certainly was the case with Spendabuck.
Well, it all gets into the, you know, the magic of what flips the switch, right?
Yes, exactly.
As John Secura says, I mean, and there's lines that you know, that might have been languishing otherwise, and they come alive with the introduction of you know, some ancestor that is lurking you know, in that DNA strand. It's an amazing thing.
I'm glad you actually said that, because there was a secret to Spendabuck, and you just hit upon it, and I'll tell you what it was when he got sent to the Southern Hemisphere, and if you look at Einstein's pedigree, if you bring it up, and by the way, the other horse I was talking about was Hardbuck.
Hardbuck, wow.
Yeah. But I'm just looking at this, Steve, because I just pulled up Spendabuck, but he also had Pico Central, G1 winner.
Oh, yeah. It was terrific.
Hardbuck. He had Einstein. They were all bred in some southern hemisphere and ended up coming here. But one of the key things, and I'm going to bring up the pedigree of Einstein to point this out to you, because you actually hit it on the nail. What was one of the things that turned Spendabuck around? Well, it was this stallion in Brazil, a leading stallion called Gadir, son of Lee Fard. And he stood at a Brazilian farm and they bred a bunch of Gadir mares to spend a buck, and it was like the switch got turned on. It just took off. And he had a huge resurgence in South America. And like I said, several of those, like Einstein and Arbus, were brought back up north and proved their mettle here, too.
Well, one thing about Einstein, and I remember we had this discussion probably with Eric Hamelbeck when he was at Adena at the time. And one of the things that seemed exciting, and I know it probably came up with Helen Pitts, too, Einstein was a complete outcross.
That
authentic five-generation outcross.
Yeah, I'll tell you if for people that are actually interested in the nuts and bolts about this, in the case of Einstein, I mentioned he's out of a Gadir mirror. I don't know if he has his pedigree up. I'm just going by memory, but. Gadir stood in Brazil at this farm called Fazenda Monsier. And what happened was when they got Gadir, they were breeding the dogs with their farm stallion, Waldmeister, to Gadir. So if you look at all of these pedigrees, what you're going to find is that Spendabuck had a huge amount of success with mares by that were by Gadir out of mares by Waldmeister. And it's like, wow, boom, 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 this one, this one, this one, you know? And that farm, which is one of the most storied stud farms, I've been there in Brazil, it's called Fazenda Mondesir. And it was owned by the Peixoto de Castro family, well-known, long-time Brazilian breeders. And in fact, one of the descendants of that family that still owns Fazenda Monsier, we call him PC. He comes up north for these sales all the time, and he's around. I had dinner with him in Kentucky once, and, you know, talking about my trip down to Brazil and to this farm in the early 90s, too. But that was a very key thing, and I guess when we talk about anti-spend, that was the trigger for not only her own success, but for the success of her sires subsequently in the Southern Hemisphere.
Amazing. And it's the, you know, the genetic code. It's a mystery. The mysteries of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny. Sid, we got about 5 minutes, really, four minutes, and you did mention something that also triggered my memory from last week. I did mention the broodmare compatibility analysis and finish up the visit by telling people what they get when you put one together. And you know, the time is now, as we mentioned last week. There's a little bit of a wait time. But explain to them what you do when you put together those analyses.
Well, a lot of the analysis that we do, we take a mare, for instance, we ask the client a couple of things, you know, a brief description of the mare, a physical description. Then we also ask the client what that client, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. Are they breeding to sell yearly? Are they breeding to race their homebreds? Are they breeding with the potential to do both? We ask them what stud fee level they're, you know, interested in. And then we get to work. We analyze the entire mare's family, female family. And just like what we were talking about, we look at, you know, what if it's a mare that's had production, we look at her production. We look at her sister's production. We essentially look at the production of every female in the family. That's one thing. The other thing we have, our Lion score, which was developed by Roger Lyons, named after him. That's like an X-ray. It with whatever stallion we're looking at, we look at all the ancestors in that mare's pedigree that that particular stallion has encountered through the years. And we see then whether that stallion is successful with those types of ancestors. It's a really great tool, you know, and all of these are tools to find out, for example, if that stallion has had experience with the females of this mare's family and how they've done. How has that stallion done with the males in this mare's, in this mare's family? And this is separate from a nick or a sire line cross. A sire line cross is taking that stallion and just looking at how that stallion has done with that mare's sire or grandsire, you know, on the cross between the two sire lines. That's an important tool, too. But this looks even further within the pedigree. So it's sort of like a, I always kind of refer to it as like a radiograph or an X-ray or an MRI. So, you know, we look at all that stuff together and we see what stallion profiles out there in that stud fee level that the client has given us a range of stud fees work. And then, of course, you know, if they're breeding to sell or stuff, you know, we'll look at proven stallions and some first crop stallions, right?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff, basically.
It's terrific. It you know, it can run 30, 40 pages of excuse me, of information. And if you're somebody that has partners, and you know, rather than being speculative, you can, you know, you can. I did that with our partners. You know, sent copies to all the partners to. Understand what we were, you know, the decision making we were going through, and it you know, helps put everybody on the same page and helps them understand the opportunity and what, you know, what the choices are and why. It'll really help the focus in what can be an overwhelming, especially if you're fairly inexperienced, especially if it's your first time. It'll really clarify it. And so far, Sid and Roger are 3 for 3 with our mares when it comes to Motown, who we got for a ham sandwich, and Leah Frick, who 10 minutes after she was, Carlisle Bell was pronounced in full, she got boosted from New York to Kentucky. And Mosler, who's just doing everything right himself. So those are all recommendations from Sid and Roger. We're still a ways away from racing, but we got three beautiful babies.
Well, I just hope that you can come up with one big horse there, you know.
I'll take a medium horse. I don't even need a big horse. I'll take a... give me a 7 1/4 horse. I'll take an allowance winner right now.
Yeah. I did mention maiden winner. Last week that we're running at like a 3-week lag, and one of your listeners, Bob, called in right after the show to book a mare. Of course, nice. I saw him running a 3-week lag. He knew that. He said that's why he called right away. But, he heard it on the show and called right away.
Well, 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111. Get a hold of Work Thoroughbred Consultants, Roger, and Sid will get you going. And we'll enjoy Breeders' Cup and the sale. And, and literally, you know, a week later, you'll have your report, and you can make the decisions. And Sid will help you with the stud farms too, if you've never gone through that, and with the stallion managers and so forth. So put yourself on the lead, as Sonny Taylor says to me. I love it. Front runner. You got to be a front runner. Sid, this was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Steve, for everything. I guess I'll talk to you next week. where the
we'll talk next week. We'll probably talk some juveniles, particularly. We'll as we always do, and Sid will contribute, and he'll have his price plays for the Breeders' Cup, and he's got a consistent record as well of finding fun prices in the Breeders' Cup. Let's take the break. It's exactly 11 o'clock, 2 hours in, an hour to go. Ed Martin of Racing Commissioners International will join us next, and Ed will lay out so that all of us can understand what is going on with these budgetary requests, suggestions, parameters, whatever. The HISA budgeting process, $72 million. And there won't be anybody better than Ed to explain the ramifications to state agencies, the regulators. Ed Martin joins us next at the races. Stay with us.